Gene Casale, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. Before we get started, I want to mention our call-in number is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history. In 1763, the Seven Years' War, also known as the French and Indian War, ends as the Treaty of Paris is signed by France, England, and Spain. The huge costs of this conflict were the main reason why England enacted a number of taxes on the colonies in the following years, sparking flames which would erupt into a bonfire in the form of the American Revolution. In 1962, American pilot Francis Gary Powers is exchanged by the Soviets for a Russian spy previously captured by the United States. Powers' U-2 reconnaissance plane had been shot down over the Soviet Union in May 1960 at the worst possible time, just before a planned summit meeting between President Dwight Eisenhower and Soviet Premier Khrushchev, one of the major flashpoints of the Cold War. And in 1996, man and machine square off as world chess champion Garry Kasparov loses the first of a six-game match to Deep Blue, an IBM computer which could process 200 million moves per second. Kasparov was a chess prodigy, having become junior chess champion of the Soviet Union at age 13, and the youngest world champ ever at 22. Despite facing technological superiority, Kasparov went on to win the match. Perhaps the most remarkable outcome of this event was the fact that one man could go up against a highly sophisticated computer and win in a battle of the mind. State, county, and municipal fairs have been part of America for decades. Our country started with a largely agrarian economy. Farmers have supplied food for a hungry nation for over three centuries. Local fairs typically showcase this heritage, with displays of food products, dairy cows and milking techniques, animal husbandry, and farming methods. The Unionville Fair has been held just north of Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, since the 1920s. Each year, the fair allows local farmers to show their products to visitors from around the region in the largest display of agricultural goods, arts and crafts, and related items in the Chester County area. This three-day event offers great food, live music, dozens of interesting exhibits, a rodeo, locally created art, and fun for the entire family. Today we're going to be talking with Bonnie Musser, who's been involved with the fair for years. Her associate, Danielle Chamberlain, will also be calling in shortly to join us. Bonnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gene. I appreciate the invitation.
Yeah, thanks for being on. First, just right up, what exactly is the Unionville Fair? What does it bring to the public?
Well, I think you mentioned a few of the things in your opening statements there, but as you noted, we started in 1924. That was the first year, and it was started by one of the ag teachers so that his students could display some of their products they grew at home, and it's grown into the event that it is now. Our main purpose is to promote and educate the public on about agriculture, agribusiness, homemaking, handcrafts, and the arts. We encourage and stimulate interest and involvement of the people on the Unionville-Chatsworth area and the Kennett area in the growth and the production and selection and exhibition of products through an activity that we feel is very educational.
Oh, that's great. You know, probably a lot of our listeners are familiar with the well-known 4-H clubs, which were around for decades. I'm not sure if there's any interaction between 4-H clubs and the fair.
Not much anymore, unfortunately. As you mentioned, there's not as many of them around, and there's none really in the Unionville-Kennett area. There was a small one in the Chatsworth area for a while that was more into the history end of things. But as far as the true 4-H club, they're few and far between, and it's difficult to get them as a group to enter. We do have one department for them to enter, and that's just a sort of a conglomeration of whatever clubs that are directly director can gather together and they'll bring some of their things into display. A lot of the people that that do enter into the dairy show, a lot of them are members of 4-H,
mm-hmm.
but not there is no actual local 4-H connection anymore. There used to be. It used to be a huge 4-H and FFA, the Future Farmers of America, were two very big things in our fair back in years past. But again, that's another organization that is falling by the wayside due to the lack of farming in the area.
Mm-hmm. Now, many of our listeners who are outside of this region may not know that Chester County is the mushroom capital of the world.
That's right.
Kennett Square has that title, actually, and Kennett Square is just down the road from here in Westchester. Tell us a little bit about the ag exhibits that you have. I mean, what are some of your favorite exhibits that you typically have at the fair?
Well, actually, some of my favorite really are the farm exhibits. I love walking into the fair building and just smelling the hay and the silage and the vegetables and all that mixture of all that together is kind of one of my favorite memories from the time I was really very young. The farmers do bring in their silage and their corn and vegetables, and we have backyard gardeners that bring in their vegetables and try to grow the largest pumpkin. They showcase their flowers. We have a huge display of specimen flowers. The mushroom industry, they're great. They bring in lots and lots of mushrooms, all sorts of mushrooms. When I look at them, I'm not even sure what they are. I have to read the label to find out what their name is. They're very unusual ones. And we rely on them to also bring in a lot of the information. They usually have brochures that have, you know, information about the health benefits of mushrooms and also usually have some things there with some really interesting recipes. But we do have a very large display of them. And believe it or not, even though we're in little old Unionville, we still do have the largest display of the agriculture products in Chester County. The other two fairs that are in the county are earlier in the year, and I think that's part of the thing. They don't, the harvest season hasn't come along. Ours being in October, we're at a great time. All the harvesting is, you know, just happening, and things are still nice and fresh, and they've had the whole summer to grow.
Mm-hmm. I believe your associate, Danielle Chamberlain, has just joined us on the line. Danielle, okay. Are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, Gene.
Oh,
and
thank
Bonnie.
You. Thank you for joining in. You know, we're talking about some of the exhibits you have at the fair. I've been to the fair several times. In fact, I think I've given a lecture a couple of different years, and it's really a lot of fun. When you walk into the tent, the range of food displays is pretty incredible. I mean, everything from every type of gourd you could ever conceive of to pumpkins and hot peppers, sweet peppers. I mean, just about everything you think of. Is there any specific type of vegetable or ag product that you tend to get more of, you tend to display more of?
I think that depends a lot on the weather.
Mm-hmm.
A couple years we haven't had a lot of tomatoes because of what the last two summers have not been really conducive to tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
But we had lots of other things. There was a lot more of the green type things, the lettuces and, well, not really lettuces, spinaches and some of those kinds of things. They seem to do better, and they did better later in the year. So it kind of depends on that. It really, as all farmers know, and anybody that grows a vegetable garden, it's all dependent on the weather.
Yeah. Now, Danielle, thanks for joining us. We didn't talk really much about dairy farms, but I do know that you have a milking exhibit or milking contest. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, we have a cow milking contest, and it is a big highlight of the fair. We have two portions. We have the celebrity cow milking contest, where we have local celebrities that compete against each other, and we also have a representative from each of the elementary schools who, for example, at Hillendale, they have actually won the last 2 years. The principal tends to be the one that comes, and then one of the fifth graders is selected to join him.
Mm-hmm.
And each school picks their person, you know, differently. But it's always a student and some faculty member or a teacher. And that's always been a fun competition.
Mm-hmm. I know that just from walking around the fair, you have several stalls where you have a variety of different farm animals. I mean, how many do you typically get for the fair? Is it dozens, hundreds? How many do you actually get at the fair itself?
On the dairy show, we often have probably over 100 head of dairy cows.
Mm.
The llama people bring, I don't know, they difference each year, but they usually have several llamas that they bring. We haven't been able to have as many of some of the other farm animals over the years. Things have changed and the rules have changed. We have to be way more careful, like for a petting zoo and stuff. But we do have some small animals that we bring in for the kids to see.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the horse show, which is always a big thing, too. But that just takes place one day, and that's for the the young people to participate in that, and they it's probably their only chance to really be in a real horse show, what would be considered a real horse show, and it's basically, you know, geared for the amateurs and the young people.
Mm-hmm. I know that you have in the last few years you've had a bucking bronco where people could just get on it and ride. Tell us a little bit about that. I think kids love that thing.
They do. That's the mechanical bull, and I think it's been 3 or 4 years now, and it's always been a favorite, and they usually ride it more than one time.
It's very popular because I can see the line to get onto it. It's always very long. Just curious, do you rotate between farmers for the annual displays, or do some farmers come back every single year?
They come back every year. I mean, we don't rotate. It's open to any of them to participate and bring in their products to show, and then they have a chance of winning ribbons, and that's always a big thing for them. They like hanging those ribbons around.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier that Chester County is very well known for its mushroom production as the mushroom capital of the world. What kind of information do you actually give on the mushroom industry? Do you have displays of techniques or types of mushrooms? What kind of information can people typically expect to find at the fair on mushrooms?
Probably at our fair, not as much. The mushroom festival takes place just about 2 or 3 weeks before our fair. So they, you know, they've all been doing that for a while. And so when it comes time to our fair, they don't really bring out some of their big displays. We have over the years done different things to try to, you know, encourage them to come out. But the last few years, it's basically they just bring their products and show them and you know, put them in competition and see who gets the best to show for all the mushrooms that get entered. As I said, they do put information about brochures out that people can pick up and look at.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they've had a table with a specific display, but they haven't done that for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Danielle, what kinds of exhibits do you have for the kids?
Exhibits in the Red Barn, you mean?
Yeah, in the Red Barn. Do you have things like lectures, storytelling, contests?
We have storytelling, and Friday is the class trip day at the fair where the four elementary schools do come to the fair, and that's a very structured program. They're moving from one item to the other where the Penn State Extension has talked about that has baby chicks on display. I think the Historical Society does something. We have Robin Moore doing the storytelling. Mm-hmm. And what else am I forgetting?
Bonnie, I've seen him. He's great. He's great storyteller.
We have that with Junk Rock.
Junk Rock.
A group that makes music with recycled items. So they talk about recycling.
Oh, that's great.
So that program can change from year to year, like maybe one or two things. That's pretty much the program. And the first graders and the fourth graders come for that day on Friday.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a lot of fun. By the way, I have seen the Robin Moore's lectures. He does a great job. We're just about to take a commercial break, but please stay on the line with us, and we'll be right back after this version of Living History.
Radio PA's Ask the Governor program brings you access to Pennsylvania's governor like you've never had before. You can send your questions and comments to Governor Tom Wolf now by going to PAMatters.com and clicking the Ask the Governor link at the top of the page. You could be part of our next edition of Ask the Governor.
School funding, investment in schools is really important to me. My goal is to try to provide for a fairer tax system for everybody. I said, send me a full year budget, a real budget, and I'll let it pass. We need to get to work to get this budget done.
You can also listen to Ask the Governor and watch exclusive video clips from the show on PAMatters.com.
This is Governor Tom Wolf. We'll talk about the issues that affect you on Ask the Governor. You can submit your question or comment today by visiting PAMatters.com.
Ask the Governor is a production of Radio PA and PAMatters.com in association with TFM Advertising.
Are you tired of looking up at that old, streaky, stained, tired, ugly roof? Tired of that ugly roof taking away from your home's curb appeal? G.P. Martini Roofing wants to solve your curb appeal woes with a new roof built with Atlas Pristine Shingles featuring Scotch Guard Protector from 3M, the only shingle with a lifetime limited warranty against algae streaks and stains. G.P. Martini's crews are highly trained professional installers of asphalt shingle roofs, and now with the power of of Atlas Shingles and Scotchgard Protector from 3M, GP Martini will install a roof that will provide the lasting color you choose for as long as you're in your home. Let GP Martini Roofing have a look at that nagging leak, or just call to consult about upgrading the look for your prized investment. Call them today, 610-873-1696. Whether your need is residential or commercial, GP Martini Roofing has the expertise in-house to solve your problem, or to simply make your home or office look its best. 610-873-1696. That's the number to call. 610-873-1696. And one of those GP Martini trucks will be on its way to you.
From Westchester to Coatesville, from Kennett to Chester Springs, from Parksburg to Paoli, this is your home for all things Chester County. WCHE 1520 AM, the talk of Chester County.
I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. We're talking with Bonnie Musser and Danielle Chamberlain about the historic Unionville Fair. We've been talking a little bit about the horses that you showcase at the fair. Listeners from around the region may not know that beloved Kentucky Derby winner Barbaro was treated just down the road at the New Bolton Center after his injury at the Preakness. What kinds of things do you have regarding horses?
Well, basically, we have the horse show is the main thing we have. Horses are a little harder to keep in a closed-in spot, small space, quite frankly, to have them showcase there in other ways. But it's mostly the horse show is what we have had with the horses.
Mm-hmm.
And when we have our parade, lots of times we have had some horses and carriages in that over the years. I don't remember when the last time we did the horse and carriage, but we have had also the horses with the hounds from Mrs. Hannum.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I'm very, very familiar with the Hannums. How do you reach out to the public for support for the fair? Do you have a special marketing effort or other fundraising type activities?
We have a fundraiser that's held on Thursday evening before the fair opens to the public on that Friday, and that's called Denim and Diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a silent auction a couple years. We had a little bit different format this past year, and we have sponsors that have been sponsors for a long time with the fair, and we get new ones on a yearly basis. And we also had some sponsors this year for Denim and Diamonds.
Mm-hmm. Do you connect with other fairs around the region or the state of Pennsylvania? Do you have any interaction with other fair groups?
We are part of the larger organization, the Pennsylvania Association of County Fairs,
mm-hmm.
and they have their convention every year in January. And I was just at that convention, and Bonnie has also attended that convention, and our local queen also goes up and competes at the state level. And Shannon represented us very well this year. She was not the winner, but mm-hmm. She competed with 60 other girls.
Oh, that's great.
So we are there, and they have roundtable discussions. Sometimes they're more pertinent to bigger fairs, but there's also topics that are more pertinent to smaller fairs.
Mm-hmm.
As part of that association, obviously, to give you just from one end to the other, is the Allentown and Bloomsburg Fair, which is much larger than we are.
Mm-hmm.
But they're part of that larger association. So, yes, we do interact with other fairs
mm-hmm.
at the state level.
People who have driven through or just briefly visited Chester County area outside Philadelphia know that it's fairly rural and quite lovely. But with the expansion of business and industry, farmers around the country have seen limits on their available farmland. In terms of your interactions with the local farmers, how are they dealing with these kinds of challenges on the available land? Do they talk to you about that?
A little bit, and I think a lot of it is there's more modern ways for them to produce more per acre. There's lots of experiments and testing done on grains and seeds and things that they can produce more per acre. They have learned to tighten their belts in some ways so that they can do something a little bit different. Don't have a lot of real, particular instance I can really give you, but I know that's a part of it. They do try to rent a lot of extra land to grow their crops on also to help keep it open, that, if somebody has some large acreage and they're willing to rent out their property as a farmer to grow a crop on it, that keeps that land open and it gives the farmer an area where he can grow more crops.
Another example would be the Bailey farm actually sold off some of their acres so that they could then produce milk on site and have a milk producing operation on site so that they could kind of move forward and, you know, with the times.
Mm-hmm. I have actually visited that dairy. They're one of the longtime local dairies in this area. You know, not many people who are just visitors from out of state know that the Brandywine Valley has a winemaking industry. They call it the Brandywine Valley Wine Trail. There's more than a dozen wineries here in this region. Do you have any interaction with them for the fair?
We've had some small interaction with them. We have tried to get them more involved. It seems to be it's a busy time of the year for them. Like apparently there's it's a time to do some harvesting, and they don't have the people that they can spare to really come to the fair and do some, you know, any real big displays at the fair. We have two or three have been very helpful in donating their wine to this Denim and Diamonds that Danielle mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And we have now opened a department for homemade wines and beer, and we are getting some of the local restaurant owners and managers and distributors and wine producers to be the judges for that. So we're making a slow inroad into that, but they say it's apparently is a busy time of the year for them,
mm-hmm.
and that's one of the reasons they have not really gotten very involved, although we have reached out to them, you know, on several occasions.
Mm-hmm. Now, for our listeners who haven't actually attended the fair, what time of year is it? When is the week that you have it?
Always the first weekend in October. So
mm-hmm.
this year, I believe the dates are the 2nd to the 4th.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct, Bonnie?
No, actually, it starts on the 1st of September this year, I think. I mean, the 30th
of
September.
No, September is, I might not have the exact dates here.
It's the first weekend there in October.
Okay, very beginning of October.
We weren't prepared for that question.
That's okay.
And that would have been the easiest one of all, right?
Yeah. Right.
Very beginning of October for our listeners,
if
they're interested in any email fair. You know, I'm actually looking at a list of all the different things you have at the fair, and it's really pretty incredible. You have a fair queen pageant. You have dozens and dozens of vendors. Arts and crafts, storytelling, giggles and grins, fair food, beekeeper, mechanical bull riding, cow milking contest, lip sync contest, blue ribbon apple pie contest. My gosh, this all sounds fun and makes me a little hungry. Tell me about some of the contest winners. For example, I mean, are the apple pie winners, are they really superb locally grown apples and really excellent products?
They definitely have to use local products. Those contests, the blue ribbon apple pie, we have a special angel food cake, and we have two chocolate entries, chocolate cakes and for the adults and chocolate cookies and bars for the youth. And that's a PA preferred contest. They have to use as many local products as they can find and have that documented in their recipes. And the winners of all four of those contests get to go to the state farm show in January and to compete against usually somewhere between 80 and 100 other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a huge, huge event. But, yes, and then we give, you know, they get nice prize money for that, too.
Oh, that's excellent. You know, with the change over to more of an urban or urbanized landscape, a lot of people around the country and certainly here in the Brandywine Valley area are thinking about whether they want to continue the operation of their farms. And, you know, the second and third generations are, some of them at least, are growing less interested in farming. And I guess that has at least some tangential effect on interest for the fair. I understand there's been a little bit of a question about the continuance of the fair. Tell us about the challenges you now face and what you're doing to help resolve them.
Well, we, as you may know, we put out a press release a couple weeks ago. We are in search of some new leadership, namely a president and a treasurer, as my 2 years is up and the treasurer's as well. And we're also really looking for a younger generation to come in. We have a seasoned board that will continue and is eager to teach the younger generation. So we are seeking more help, and also to fill the leadership position. The good news is I've had a positive response from our press release. I've had a couple people contact me. Actually, there's at least two people that are interested in both roles, and we are having a big meeting on February 17th, next Wednesday, where we need to make sure that we have those roles filled as well as a few other roles so that the fair can carry on later this year. And by the way, those dates are September 30th, which is a Friday, and then the 1st and the 2nd of October.
That's for this year's fair.
That's correct.
Yes. And in terms of the support for the fair, do you get support from a lot of the local farmers, farmers organizations, agribusiness in general? What kind of support do you get from the community?
Well, we get a lot, go out to the sponsors, a lot of the local businesses, and get sponsorship money. And as far as the farmers, I think they support us by being there and doing a lot of the work for us, bringing their tractors in to be shown, bringing their exhibits to be shown. I mean, that's what our fair is all about, is all that part of it, and that's a part of the educational part. I think they, again, it's always a busy time for farmers, but they do support us in being there and do what they can for us when we ask. So they donate, bales of hay for us to use for various and sundry things. They donate their equipment if we need it for heavy work. So I think we get a lot of support from them, and a lot of them do that. It's kind of in the background. You almost forget that they're there doing what they do for us sometimes, because they just, step up when the need is there for us.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and of course, as we mentioned earlier, the Bailey family runs the dairy tent, and that's also their cow that's used for Cow Pie Bingo, as well as the cow milking contest.
Right. I've actually met the Baileys. In fact, they also often have an exhibit or a setup stand at the Chad's Ford Days down here in Chad's Ford every year, and they have their cows, and people love to come up and take a look at their display and pet the cows. And they've been around for a long time. I know they're a long-standing local dairy. In terms of the future for the Unionville Fair, I mean, are there any changes in programs or different options you're thinking of pursuing that might, enhance the interest for the fair? What kinds of new ideas are you bouncing around to maybe improve things in the future?
Well, again, with new people, you have new ideas. Although I believe as a board, we will stick to the agricultural roots. I don't think you're going to see a Ferris wheel on the property, but we're always open to new ideas. As we mentioned, the mechanical bull was a new idea that was a hit. We've tried a couple of different things. Some things will work, some things may not. And you just, again, when you go up to the state association that I mentioned, it's also a huge trade show where there are plenty of people there marketing their different events that they have, whether it's a petting zoo, whether it's a country singer, or a clown act. So there's room for improvement, and we're always open to new ideas.
If I could interject in that too, and I was remiss in not mentioning this before when you're talking about animals and horses in particular, but that's how we got started with the Willowdale Pro Rodeo that we have at our fair.
Oh yeah,
and that's sanctioned by the PRCA, which is the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association.
Oh, yeah.
And that has been a huge hit. And when we first talked about it, we were all a little nervous about, will this work and can we pull this off? And we did. And again, the community was behind us. We got lots of sponsorships for that, because it's not an inexpensive thing to have.
That is great.
And we had lots and lots of local people that helped to prepare the necessary ground and the arena that we needed so we could have it.
That is excellent. I appreciate that. Bonnie and Danielle, thanks so much for being with us on the show today. Be sure to tune in next Wednesday, February 17th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, when we'll be talking with Christopher Densmore, curator of the Friends Historical Library at Swarthmore College, about Quakers and the Underground Railroad. Thank you all for joining us today for Living History.